Hey, this is John. Nick had some personal matters to attend to this week, so I'm going to be attempting my first solo episode. And I apologize if you hear any noises, or shuffling or whining, because I've got Morrison the good boy in this room right now, who is laying down on my bed next to me. We're going to try to keep that nickname as good boy as long as he remains quiet. So one of my favorite websites in the world is Atlas Obscura, and I went through some of the stories there and I found a really cool article about the history of tea rooms. It's got New York City, it's got fortune telling, it's got police raids, and it's got a bunch of racism. So let's dive in. Welcome to Stranger Still, a podcast where I answer the questions you never thought to ask. I'm John Began, and today, our journey begins in New York in the 80s. Epidemics ran rampant in the city's slums. The streets were covered in horse manure. Nightclubs catered to downscale clientele, and besides the usual illegal liquor, gambling, and prostitution featured nightly fistfights, shootings, stabbings, and police raids. sorry about that. It was actually the 1880s. That's where history records the first examples of tea rooms. Now, tea rooms weren't what you think. Or maybe not what I think, because I know that in our matcha episode, we talked about the tea ceremony. And even though this was a meditative experience, it was mostly based around atmosphere. Now, while the earliest examples were from the 1880s, these businesses did grow and expand a little bit because they were pretty scarce and far and few in between as the city started to grow. So it was actually in the 1920s and then in the 1930s when they had their big boom. Now, when I say exploiting mysticism, I also mean exploiting stereotypes. So we're going to have to talk a little bit about the word gypsy. Gypsy was a derogatory term used to describe the Romani people. It's kind of similar to calling Native Americans Indians, but if they're here before us, aren't they just Americans? But I digress. Gypsies is not a great way to refer to the Romani people. They're an Indo-Aryan ethnic group, and they originated from parts of modern-day India. And after a lot of Romani people did immigrate into the United States, and they had these problems with Americans thinking they were Egyptian and there's all this dumb stuff that they were thinking at the time, they actually took positive steps to create a good PR for themselves with the Gypsy Lore Society in 1888, which was about the same time that you started having the tea rooms. But because Americans viewed them as mystic and foreign, places across the US started to put laws into place in order to ban their practices. A Texas law in 1909 said that all companies of gypsies who supported themselves with fortune-telling would be punished as vagrants, and in 1917, New York State followed suit, making all fortune-telling illegal. In the 1930s, when the tea rooms did have their big boom, many tea leaf readers had names suggesting they were real gypsies. Again, I'm sorry for using the term so much, but that is unlikely despite the Madame Zitas, Estellas, and La Vistas. In fact, the reason the tea rooms advertised free readings was because many states and cities had laws prohibiting payments for fortune-telling as to keep genuine gypsies from settling there. That didn't really seem to slow anybody down, though, because as I've read through all these different articles, it really seemed like these were just a bunch of sandwich shops with gimmicks. So, you would go in, you would order a sandwich, you would order your tea, you would order an angel food cake, and you get a free reading with it. So it's just like a little perk at the end. But really, it's because it would be illegal for you just to say, come in and I'm going to read these tea leaves for you and let you know what your future is going to be. Even though it was a place that was just like seen as light fun, it wasn't something that was really taken too seriously, at least by people in the 1930s who were basically just playing dress up. So here's how it worked, and here's how so many people got offended. By 1930, there was one woman who opened over 30 locations across the United States. Most of them were in New York City, and that's where she was from. And it kills me that this article doesn't even mention her name, but evidently it was a pretty profitable business for her, because after she'd open each one, she would sell it to a new owner. They would stick to the business model of getting people in the door with sandwiches, teas, and cakes, and then they would get new seers in. So they're trying to generate excitement by having different guests and famous seers from across the country come and visit their places and shuffle them around. But in order for you to get an idea of the atmosphere and what they were all about, I'm just going to straight up read this paragraph from Restauranting Through History. I quote, "Usually it was all in fun. Gypsy Tirims dressed waitresses in peasant costumes with bandana headdresses and adopted brilliant color schemes, such as orange and black with yellow candles and red tables and chairs. Most customers, almost always women, saw the readings as light entertainment suitable for clubs and parties. But sometimes, though, as advertised, suggested the patrons' reasons for having their tea leaves red were not so happy. A 1930 advertisement for the Mystic Tea Room in Kansas City, Missouri asks,
"Have you worries, financial, domestic, or otherwise? Our gifted readers will help you solve your problems."
Only it was a newspaper ad. It wasn't on the radio, so it didn't sound like that. But by this point, they had to swear that they were just selling sandwiches. It's almost exactly like when I go to Subway and Kyle, my local sandwich artist, lets me know, "I predict pickles." And I say, "Yeah, Kyle, I get those every time I come in here, literally all the time." "Oh, I see pickles in your future." And I'm like, "Can you stop talking like that, Kyle? You're scaring the other customers." And he ignores me and he says, "Hickledy rickledy, here come the pickle D's." And I say, "I'll have that toasted, please." Except that in the 1920s, he could be fined under New York's statute of prediction, which is the coolest statute I've ever heard of. And this is exactly how Maquette Cuba got in trouble for the heinous, vicious, unfathomable crime of fortune-telling. According to the New York Herald Tribune, a peep into the future is offered as inducement towards purchase of tuna fish salad with mayonnaise dressing, nut bread, and pimento sandwiches, a dill pickle, ice cream, tea, and angel cake. Which sounds pretty pleasant till you remember that she was a crime committing criminal who accepted 25 cents from undercover policewoman Mary Vaughn in exchange for looking at her empty cup of tea leaves and telling her that she's probably going to take a trip across water and also that somebody tall, dark, and handsome would enter her life soon. Which didn't happen because she never married. And the reason we know that is because policewoman Mary Vaughn was actually pretty famous at the time. She would actually take the lead in going undercover into these tea rooms and targeting fortune tellers, along with fellow officer Lillian Harrison. Atlas Obscura explains that this mostly stems from a bunch of classism. There's a book that explains this further, written by Jan Whitaker. It's called Tea at the Blue Lantern Inn, a social history of the tea room craze in America. And she basically explains that it was mostly entertainment for working class women. And in 1931, the New York Times accused fortune tellers operating tea rooms of causing a wave of melancholia among women. I predict the New York Times got triggered! Except that's not how predictions work. This already happened in the past, but they didn't care for it. Again, it's notable to remember that many of these people were pretending to be gypsies, or Romani people. So a lot of this was racially motivated too. But the head of the policewoman, Mary Sullivan, talked to the Herald Tribune in 1931. She mentioned that many of the husbands of the women who had visited were also triggered because it is common practice of these fortune tellers to tell a woman that her husband is friendly with the mysterious blonde. She also mentioned that she saw it as an evil that they were trying to wipe out. And in the first half of 1931, there were over 100 convictions that were obtained against the New York fortune tellers. And if that wasn't weird enough, it started to get under the magician's skin. So the American Society of Magicians, fearing for their own reputations, also got involved with the Sullivan-led drive to get rid of all the fortune tellers and wipe out the evil. So they wrote an official letter from the Smithsonian Institute in Washington, D.C., declaring that they had no evidence that fortunes could truly be told. Because New York was weird AF, and who better can you trust than somebody whose job it was to lie to you about rabbits hiding in hats and doves and stuff. But despite all the raids and fines, it didn't break people's spirits. This was the Great Depression, so people were hungry for inexpensive entertainment. Plus, it was a source for jobs. And in 1935, there was even a hit ballad called In a Little Gypsy Tea Room that reached the top of the international charts and added fuel to the fire.
It was in a little gypsy tea room when I was feeling blue. It was in a little gypsy tea room I first laid eyes on you.
By the time we got to World War II, all the raids started to take a toll. And there was actually a case with a woman named Anna Mead who pleaded guilty to fortune-telling after she was warned not to do it repeatedly. She lost so many customers after her initial raid that she started picking it up again, and her statement was, "I'm giving up and moving out." But it wasn't just the raids that put an end to the tradition. Like everyone's favorite pair of JNCOs, they simply fell out of fashion. That doesn't mean it's fair, and it does mean that you have to go back to your tool shed to grab your hammer instead of reaching down to your affordable and lovely lightweight pair of JNCO jeans that can carry a hammer on the side of the pants along with multiple pockets, sometimes with buttons. But let's just say life is often cruel and unusual. But it doesn't mean that this saga didn't have a lasting impact, because in New York State today, claiming a genuine ability to communicate with spirits or lift curses and getting paid for it is a Class B misdemeanor. And fortune tellers must declare that all of their prophecies are solely for the purpose of entertainment or amusement. Nevertheless, the streets are still lined with card readers and psychics, neon signs glowing into the night, claiming to sell you some cheap hope in exchange for a few bucks, but it's no longer offered with the side of a sandwich, angel food cake, and a cup of tea. You can go to StrangerTillShow.com and check out all these awesome articles that I discovered and researched in order to get this put together. And you can leave us a review on iTunes if you want to be like super sweet and nice and awesome and great. We always read our reviews on the show. I hope you enjoyed this. I'm sorry that it was a little bit shorter. But as the post-Tea Room era New Yorkers would probably say about it, what do you want from me? Come on. Wait, am I just made of time over here? Come on, forget about it. Anyway, we're going to go back to normal next week. I appreciate your time. I'm still John.
I give you the incredible flying machine.